Habari yenu? I've tried doing that in the US, it never works. They don't respond. It's wonderful to be here. We've always looked forward to being here full time. My wife is here with me. If you can just stand up and I go to speak in a lot of places and I usually go by myself. And so when she's there, I like to introduce her. I think it was God's idea to give all of us families that we can belong to and that can remind us how weak we are and how we're not so as cool as we think we are. I remember one day I was going to speak somewhere in the U.S., a large gathering, a huge meeting, and I was very nervous. So I said to my wife, I'm really nervous about this event. And she said to me, don't forget the trash on your way out. That wasn't very helpful, but that's the family for you. God put us in family so we can be able to remember that we are just human beings, so we can't take ourselves too seriously. Now, we are here tonight after having gone through a really difficult thing yesterday. I have a friend who has been organizing conferences for us in my mahi for the last 12 years. He went to Bible school, finished, and he's been doing that for us for the last 12 years, and he was a pastor. And then he just collapsed in his bathroom and passed away last Friday, and the burial was yesterday. So my heart is still heavy with all that was going on yesterday. But we are here to speak about a topic that is truly important, and it becomes even more important when you're faced with those kinds of events, when something like that strikes, something like that happens. Because we all know, you know as well as I do, yesterday it was my friend in the coffin that we put in the ground. Tomorrow it might be you. Tomorrow it might be me. So this is not a joke when we ask the question, why not atheism? Why do we keep coming to church every Sunday to gather together to worship God? What's that all about? Why not just join the voices out there that are clamoring for this worldview, atheism? And so tonight we'll be talking about why I am not an atheist. And I want to tell you, it's something that I considered, which will sound very strange coming from someone like me. I grew up here in Kenya. I grew up in part of the time in Molo, Nakuru, and in Gilgil, and then in Kijabi for most of my life growing up here. Before I went to the U.S., I was 20 years old when I went to the U.S., but for the first half of my life was spent here. And during that whole time when I was growing up here, I don't ever remember in my family anybody sharing the gospel with us for a very long time. I remember the first time that I thought about God seriously was when my uncle, who was training to be a medical professional, came home. And he was talking to my grandmother. And my grandmother said to him, God must love you because he's doing so much for you. He's guiding you so well in your life. And my uncle said, have you ever seen me and God in a conversation somewhere? I'm doing all this by myself. He said that, and I was maybe 7 years old, and I thought, is it really possible that there is no God, that we just make this stuff up? Is it really possible? I remember thinking that question haunted me until I was about 14 years old. And that's when someone told me about Jesus, and I gave my life to Christ. When my family moved to Kijabi, I gave my life to Christ. And so it's something that I toyed with a little bit, even in my young life. And I'm sure there may be some here who are in that situation right now, who have actually come to the conclusion that atheism is the way we should go, that we should give up, talk about God, and just all become atheists even tonight. But let's talk about why I think that's a serious, serious mistake to make. And I will tell you that the number one reason why I think that's a serious mistake to make is because it's possible to know God without any kind of argument out there. It's possible to just go to God and know God. If I was at home, for example, and my two boys, my wife and I have two boys, and they were arguing with each other, and I just imagine they're outside the window arguing with each other, saying, I think Dad is home. And the other one says, I don't think so, it's too early. And they go on carrying on this conversation. Then one of them says, why don't we just go in and see if he's in? That's one way to know God. Just go to God and see if he's in. And there are many people here who have known God that way. It's not because you had such a compelling, logical argument that brought you to God. It's because you were told about God, you turned to God, and you gave your life to him. That's how it happens with a lot of people. Even those who are atheists, who are not believers today, it's not because they had a really compelling argument somewhere and that forced them to conclude that there is no God. Those arguments come later. They play a role in our faith, but they come later after we have decided what we are going to be. And so for the most part, the decision whether or not to be a believer is a decision that you make outside of the evidence. Whatever else you want to convince yourself, that is true with a lot of people. And so I'm going to set that argument aside. First of all, because it's really not an argument, it's just a claim that it's possible to know God without arguments. And that's why a lot of people, like my mom, who died in 2012, she was a very committed believer, but she had never heard there were such things as arguments for God's existence. She would have thought that was very funny if I tried to give her an argument for God's existence. For her, that was just a life that she lived. But we can't say just because she didn't have those arguments, there was something wrong with her faith. But let me ask you this. If we decided that we are going to be as rational as we want to be and to be as honest as we want to be, what conclusion should we draw? Should we decide, should we say there is no God, we'll become atheists? Or should we say God exists and we should embrace our faith in God? Which, rationally speaking, which decision is the better one to make? And I want to argue that given what we know about ourselves and what we know about the world we live in, the most logical conclusion to draw is that we need to embrace God. And if we haven't done that, there is something seriously wrong with each one of us, with those of us on the fence with regard to this question about God. So that's just a claim that I'm making. Let me begin by giving you a definition of what atheism is. An atheist is somebody who rejects the existence of God. Is a person who says that the sentence "God exists" expresses a false, represents a false proposition. If you say God exists, you are lying. God doesn't exist. That is what an atheist is. And we can talk about this. I'll try to leave as much time as possible for Q&A when we are done. So that's what atheism is. Now, is that a logical conclusion to draw given what we know about ourselves and the world that we live in? And my answer to that question is that it's not a logical conclusion to draw. I'm not even going to use my notes. I'm just going to talk to you because you all look so friendly. We're just like friends, right? So I'll just talk to you. That's not a logical conclusion to draw for a couple of reasons. And let me read a couple of passages from the Bible, and I will base what I'm going to be saying for the rest of our time on these passages. If you have your Bible, if you can turn to Psalm chapter 19. Psalm 19, and I'm going to read just a few verses from this chapter. Are we all there? Psalm 19. Forgot your soul drill. Found it? Okay. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they display knowledge. There is no speech or language where their voice is not heard. So it doesn't matter what your language is, what language you speak, or where you live, that language that speaks to us about the presence of God, the existence of God, based on what he has made, is right there for each one of us to have access to. The next one is Romans. We'll read Romans chapter 1, verse 20. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. Then we go to chapter 2 of the same book and verse 14. From verse 14, it says this: Indeed, when Gentiles who do not have the law do by nature things required by the law, they are a law for themselves, even though they do not have the law, since they show that the requirements of the law are written on their hearts, their consciences also bearing witness, and their thoughts now accusing, now even defending. I love that. Their conscience accusing, now even defending. You know what I find so funny? Just follow an atheist on the social media, right? Follow an atheist, and you will see they talk about God and think about God more than some believers do. Have you noticed that? Because their conscience troubles them. That we confirm the word of God over and over again. But let's try to think about this a little bit more logically, because many atheists will tell you that they depend on reason, and we depend on what? Faith, and therefore they are more rational because they have knowledge, and all we have are what? Beliefs, right? And that division right there is categorically false. It is not true. And let me tell you why. When you call yourself an atheist and you say that God doesn't exist, what you're saying, what most of them say mean today when they say that is this, that the physical universe and the processes therein is all there is. Matter plus time plus energy and the processes that take place in their immaterial particles exhaust reality. That's all that exists. Nothing else exists. And the only way we can be able to know about reality is through physics, biology, and chemistry. That's what many of them will tell you today. That's a materialistic point of view, an atheistic point of view today. When you do that, do you know what they have to do next? They have now to begin to borrow from a worldview that they have rejected. And so they become debtors when they make that kind of a claim. Let me show you what that means. When you say that the physical universe is all that exists, you are saying there is no such thing as meaning in life, as morality in life, and as order, and all the things that we say about the complexity of the universe, there is no way you can be able to get those things if those things require a mind, a thinking intelligent, in order for them to function the way they do. If they require an intelligence behind their operation, you are rejecting that intelligence behind that operation, and you are giving us a system that is just rocks. And then you are telling us that from those rocks, you are able to create meaning. And let me even tell you, you don't even have the right to claim those rocks as yours. Let me see if you can follow this. I was not planning on using this argument, but you all look like really intelligent people, right? So just try and follow me on this. Let's just take those rocks. You see, even those rocks, the atheists are not entitled to them, because the moment one thing, however small, even just a molecule, however small, the moment one thing exists, that means there has to be something else that exists that is eternal, that never came into existence. Because a rock is not an eternal entity. There is no physical entity that is an eternal entity. And the moment you have just one thing existing, there has to be something that has always existed, something whose existence is impossible. Do you follow that argument? There has to be the moment one thing exists. That's why this question that people ask, philosophers have been asking all the time, one of the most difficult questions to answer in philosophy, this: why is there something rather than nothing? Even one thing existing. Can you still hear me? The moment you have just one thing existing means there has to be something that is eternal, that has always existed. And so atheism, by limiting itself to just existence of the physical universe, already faces a very serious problem, serious objection. But let me put this in a more orderly fashion in terms of logic. You probably have had this argument. It's called the Kalam cosmological argument. It goes something like this: whatever begins to exist has a cause. Whatever begins to exist has a cause. That's premise number one. Premise number two, the universe began to exist. And the conclusion we ought to draw is this. Therefore, the universe has a cause of its existence. This argument used to be developed by philosophers long before science did its work to show that the universe actually did begin to exist. And this is how the philosophers developed this argument. Now, I'm going to have to ask you to put on your thinking caps tonight, just for tonight, right? Just try very hard and follow me. We'll have a Q&A. You can ask me questions if anything is unclear. But they used to argue like this. If you have, say you have dominoes, they stretch out, you know what dominoes are, right? They stretch out this way to my right, far, far out. If we say, wait, take the domino that's right next to me here and mark it X, all right? At some point, domino X is going to fall if the dominoes are falling, right? But let me ask you this. If the dominoes that have to fall to my right are infinite, do you think the domino right next to me marked X will ever fall? Will it fall if you have an infinite number of dominoes to my right, will we ever get to the domino that is right next to me? Somebody said yes, and somebody else said no. Okay. Now I'm going to open up the floor a little bit so that you can, if you said yes, explain why. If you are brave enough, if you say no, explain why. Anybody brave enough? I'm slowing down so that we can all catch up on this point. It's a really important point. If the dominoes to my right are infinite, you know what infinite is? Never ending, right? If an infinite number of dominoes have to fall before you get to this domino here marked X, would this domino marked X ever fall? Yeah? You said no. Okay, why? Thank you. The answer is no. It would never fall. You know why? Because you can never finish anything that is infinite. It can never come to an end. So it would never fall. It would never get to domino marked X. And so philosophers would say this. If we take this year, 2016, and we make it domino X, 2016, we have years that have gone by, right? If those years were infinite, we would never be able to get to year 2016. And so they concluded, just from their mind, there are people who have nothing better to do than to think about these kinds of things. They are called philosophers. And you know what they concluded? There is no way, this is long before Einstein, they concluded that time itself must be finite. It cannot be infinite. Time must be finite. That's a conclusion that they drew. And now, this conclusion was
spectacularly.
Thank you. What he said. Confirmed by Einstein with his theories. And that came to be called what? The Big Bang. That the universe had a beginning. The universe has not always existed. It had a beginning. That is confirmed today. That's the view that most of the people who study these things, that's the view they hold. The universe began to exist. It has not always existed. And because it hasn't always existed, it must have a cause. Now, when they say, please follow me, when they say that the universe began to exist, they are talking about matter, energy, time, and space. They all came into existence a finite time ago. We ask questions about it. Was it 6,000 years ago, 14 billion years ago? Let's set that aside for now. Set that aside completely. Even if you take a trillion years, we still have a beginning. We still must contend with the fact that the universe is finite. It began to exist. And if that is true, then we go to the second premise. It must have a cause, right? Now we ask ourselves this question. Hope you're still following me. What kind of a cause brought that universe into existence? And here is where we find the strangest things taking place. Because the attributes given for the entity that brought the universe into existence tend to mirror the same attributes that we say God possesses. For example, whatever brought the universe into existence must be eternal, must be timeless. Because it created time, it cannot exist in time. It must be timeless. It also must be immaterial, spirit, a spirit being, because it created space, so it must be immaterial. It also must be very, very intelligent, given the complexity of the universe. It must be extremely powerful, given the vastness of the universe. And it also must be personal, because it could make decisions. You see all that? And these are the same attributes that believers have always said God possesses. That's what the Bible says. And actually, the Bible went against the sense of the time by proclaiming that the universe at the beginning. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. When it says the heavens, it's talking about the rest of the universe, the heavens and the earth. It all came into existence with what is called usually called the Big Bang. And you know, there's this famous scientist, Robert Jastrow. He wrote a book called God and the Astronomers. In that book, he said this. He said, for the scientist who has lived by his faith in the power of reason, the story ends like a bad dream. He has scaled the mountains of ignorance. He's about to conquer the highest peak. And as he pulls himself over the final rock, he is greeted by a band of theologians who have been sitting there for centuries. That's what he wrote in his book. And Einstein tried very hard to change those equations so that there would be no beginning of the universe, but there was no way that could be done. The universe began to exist. We are living in a time today when it's very exciting to be doing this kind of work, because there is so much confirmation of what the Bible teaches about the existence of the universe that we really have to just sit back and watch people who deny God's existence try to explain what science itself is telling us. And don't let anyone tell you that they are relying on science. That's why they are coming to, they're saying, they're telling us we need to be atheists and we are not relying on science. Science itself had its root. It was actually founded. It came into existence because of the Bible. Did you know that? Without the Bible, we would not have had the science that we have today. I sat in a debate. There was between one of our colleagues, John Lennox, and Richard Dawkins. And John Lennox raised this point, and he said, he invoked this man. His name was Alfred North Whitehead. He wondered why that in the year 1500, the world knew no more about science than the Greeks did many centuries before. And yet, by the year 1700, Isaac Newton had mapped the laws of motion. And he asked himself, what happened? How come there was such an explosion of knowledge in Europe that gave us modern science and technology? How did that come about? And you know what his conclusion was in his book, Science and the Modern World, Alfred North Whitehead? He said the reason that happened was because people in Europe began to take the Bible seriously, and they began to take what it says about the universe having been created by God seriously. And they said, because God made us in his image, we can be able to think his thoughts after him. You actually find these phrases written by those scientists. We can be able to think God's thoughts after him. And because of that, we can be able to create things that he made, because he made us in his image. And because of that thinking, there was an explosion of scientific thinking and scientific finding that we all enjoy today, including microphones like this and the lights and all that. They came about as a result of the fact that people began to take the worldview of the scriptures very seriously. There have been many powerful civilizations throughout history, but they were not able to come up with science because their worldview, their thinking about the universe, held them back. It wasn't until the people, human beings, were separated from the universe and they could look at the universe as an artifact, as something made, something that they could study. Until that happened, there was no way science was going to develop. And it developed because believers began to take the word of God seriously. And we can talk about that during the Q&A. And so we look at the universe, and the universe we inhabit began to exist, and the cause of the universe must be a supernatural being who is also a personal being, and that's who we call God. We are not yet talking about the Christian God, I know. But we are saying atheism right there, given what we know about the universe that we live in, given what we know about the universe we live in, atheism, there's no way atheism can be true. What we know about the universe contradicts the claims of atheism. That's number one, the universe that we live in. I talked about the origin of the universe and the complexity of the universe. That was the argument, number one, if you're taking notes. Number two, we read about the moral law being written on our hearts, that God has written the moral law on our hearts, and that our conscience testifies to that. I don't know why I'm not able to speak today. Maybe I should be speaking in tongues. I think that might help a little bit. Or maybe drink some water, right? Yeah, that might help. Thank you. I'm just too passionate. I don't want anyone to be an atheist, right? The second argument is the moral nature of the universe. The moral nature of the universe. Do you realize that we live in a universe that comes packaged with rules of behavior? What you're supposed to do and what you're not supposed to do. There are many people who are very confused about this issue because they think that these are rules that we can make up, or maybe evolution has helped us come up with these rules, or the need to cooperate with each other and all that. None of that is able to account for the fact that morality is objective, that we did not create these rules. There are things that are right to do and things that are wrong to do, and you and I did not make up those rules. The universe just comes packaged with it. And we read in Romans that the Bible says that moral law is written on our hearts. It's written on our hearts, and we all know that to be true. I remember speaking with a lady when I was in seminary in California, and I was going to be working with disabled people, and the client that I had was severely disabled. He was in a wheelchair and didn't speak much. It was very difficult to understand what he was saying, and to feed him took a really, really long time. The lady who was training me when I, the very first or second day at my work there, she said to me, "There's no such thing as right and wrong." And I said to her, "You don't believe that?" She said, "Yes, I do." I said, "No, you don't." She said, "Yeah, I do. There's no such thing as right and wrong." I said, I've spent the whole day with you today, and I am 100% sure you don't believe what you're saying right now. There's no right or wrong." She was feeding this guy. It took about 2 hours to feed him. She put everything down. She looked at me and she said, "Well, I know what I believe. I know what I think. You should not be telling me what I think and what I don't think." I said to her, "So what you're telling me is this. This guy," his name was Mari, I said, "this, it takes so long to feed this guy. So next time I'm taking care of him, I can just take his food and throw it in the trash. So this is he's drooling all over himself. This is not a pleasant thing to do, to feed him." She looked at me as though I had just fallen from the sky. I said, "What's the matter?" She said to me, "You can't do that." I said, "Why not?" She said, "Because that would be," she was about to say wrong. So she said, "That would be," and then she said, "You may be right." You may be right. Even when we deny morality, we know, as the Bible says, that our conscience testifies to us that there is such a thing as right and wrong. And that's why we feel guilt and shame. We experience all those emotions because we have been wired to live in a moral universe. This game of atheism, we are living in a time when it has truly been tried, where they set aside God and they became God themselves. Nietzsche said that because God had died in the 19th century, the 20th century was going to be the most bloody century ever. And he was proven right. There were more people who were killed by atheism by people who held to that worldview more killed by atheism than in all the previous 19 centuries put together. That's what that worldview, especially when it came in the form of communism. So this has been tried and it has failed. Again, I don't want to say spectacularly, but this time I think the water helped, so I think I can say it now. But this is when we are toying with an idea that is truly, truly dangerous. It has ravaged the West. It has found its way here. And there are many people who are attracted to this ideology only because we are truly not paying attention to what has been going on in our world. We, those of us who are living at this time, have no excuse, because there's nothing being offered to us as far as atheism is concerned that has not been put into practice, and we know where it has led. We know where it leads. I've been writing a dissertation, almost done with it, at the University of Georgia, and I've been studying this question about morality and where it comes from. And I want to tell you, it is not possible to defend the objectivity of morality without God. And yet, if you say morality is not objective, there's no right and wrong that do not depend on human beings. If you reject that, then anything human beings choose to do goes. And we know where that leads. On the other hand, if there's a moral law that we did not invent, if that is true, then it follows that there is a moral law giver. Because there's no way we can be able to have, especially, obligations. It's not just having the moral law, do this, that this is right. Not just that, oh, this is good, this is valuable. It is also, you have to do this. You have to do this. That's called obligation. You're obligated to do what is right. That cannot arise at all if God doesn't exist. So I cannot be an atheist because I don't have that kind of faith. To believe that the universe and its complexity and its origin, they all popped. I have read books where they talk about the universe having come from nothing. Have you seen that? Come from nothing. In the West, they don't know what the word nothing means. I'm serious. They don't know what it means. They will go to, let me prove that to you. Very easy. They will go to the fridge. They will open it. It is full, completely packed. You cannot put anything else in that fridge. And what do they say? There's nothing to eat here. Nothing to eat here. Then they grab something. They go sit on the couch. And they flip through 300 channels on TV. And what do they say? There's nothing to watch here. Sunday morning. Maybe that happens here with the ladies especially. Open the closet. It's full of clothes, right? What do they say? I have nothing to wear. It's infecting us as well, right? They don't know what the word nothing means. The word nothing means nothing, right? Nothing. And if you start with nothing, you are never going to get anything out of that. We cannot, out of nothing, nothing comes. So the origin of the universe, its complexity, and its moral nature point us very, very clearly to God. And that is why I cannot be an atheist. And I began by telling you, I cannot be an atheist because I know God, right? But I said we would not even consider that. We would try to use what we are told the atheists use, which is logic. And where does it lead us? It takes us to God. Let me make an astonishing claim here. If you hold to atheism, you also don't have the right to claim reason on your side. You don't. Let me tell you why. Because all you gave us were rocks and their processes there. There is nothing like the laws of logic. Those are independent from the rocks that atheists tell us everything came from. And we also said you don't even have the right to claim those rocks, right? So it's even worse than we thought. So they have to borrow, use reason, which is not in the categories that they gave to us. They have to borrow reason to use it. They have to live as though there is meaning in life. There's a professor, his name is John Gray from England. He's a professor of philosopher of European thought. And he says this, the reason we find it so easy to think about humanism, to think about progress, to think about all these things, is because we have taken ideas from the Bible, and we have taken God out of those ideas, and we think everything is getting better, and yet there is no justification from atheism on that issue, and he says that as an atheist. Look up his book. It's called Straw Dogs, S-T-R-A-W, Straw Dogs. He argues that they should... Atheists should stop talking about things getting better, progress and all that, because given their presuppositions, none of that can happen at all. So, I am not an atheist because I don't have that kind of faith, and I also don't want to borrow things. If I want to be a consistent atheist, I want to say things like Richard Dawkins. Sometimes he's very consistent, but other times he is not. He said there's no such thing as evil, no such thing as good, and evil that is not designed, that is not good. He says, DNA neither knows nor cares. DNA just is, and we dance to its music. And if that's the worldview you want to live, he's being very consistent there. And then he comes up, and I want to finish with this so we can go to Q&A. And then he comes up and writes a book called The God Illusion, in which he rails against the God of the Old Testament, and he just piles epithets upon the God of the Old Testament. Here's the problem. In the same book, Richard Dawkins tells us that human beings are essentially good. That Christians are wrong to say that human beings are evil. We are wrong to say that. We are evil, we have evil, we need forgiveness and all that, because we are essentially good. And then he writes a book in which he rails against God, who doesn't exist, right? And he is exonerating human beings. If God doesn't exist, all the things that were done in the Old Testament were done by who? By human beings, right? And yet he's going after who? God, and not the human beings who did those things. He told us they are good. God is bad, but God doesn't exist. This is not good thinking, right? It is not very good thinking. But that's how he thinks. That's how he functions. There's a lot of inconsistencies in the worldview of atheism. So I want to finish with this. When atheists give us their best argument against God, which is what? Who knows that? Well, the best argument against God that atheists have. What is it? Somebody said it. Yeah, evil and suffering, right? That's the best argument. And that has some bite. That's a really good argument. For atheists to use, is the best they have. This is the problem. We have the problem of evil, and they have the problem of everything else. But think through this a little bit with me. This is why I still can't be an atheist, even given the presence of evil and all that. When you argue that evil, that something is evil, what exactly are you saying? You are saying that it is not the way it is supposed to be. That's what you're saying. And when you say that, you are saying there is a way this ought to be. There's a design plan for everything that exists, but you're not everything that exists if God doesn't exist. Let me say that again because I got cut off a little bit. You can't have a design plan for how things ought to be unless there is a designer. So when you invoke evil, you are at the same time invoking God by invoking design in the universe. You are also invoking God by invoking an objective moral standard. You are saying this is wrong. And when you say that, you are also saying in the same breath, there's such a thing as right and wrong. And so once again, we are back to morality. If you give up morality, objective morality, you also give up the right to question anything about God. So even questioning evil and all that, and suffering from an atheistic point of view, you have to assume that God exists. Otherwise, you have no right to ask questions about evil and suffering at all. But what does the Bible have to say about evil and suffering? There may be somebody who's going through a very difficult time, like my friends, my friend's family, who are right now still shocked because this guy looked healthy. He was on his way to go preach at a crusade, and then he just collapsed in his bathroom and passed away. They are suffering. They're going through a very difficult time. But you know what? From a Christian perspective, even that kind of evil, that kind of event that we can't explain, when we know that God is there, we can be able to trust him even under those kinds of circumstances. Let me tell you this story. I've told those, for those of you who've been here before, you've heard me tell this story, but I'll tell it one more time because it was very touching when I heard it. It was a story about Baroness Cox, who's a very well-known lady in England. She's been a Speaker of the House of Lords. She's a nurse, a humanitarian. She goes to all kinds of places in the world to help people who've gone through tragedy. And somebody asked her to explain or to narrate to them the worst experience she's ever had, the worst thing she's ever seen, and also the best. And you know what she said? That they both took place at the same time. She and her team got to Sudan. When they got to Sudan, just as the soldiers from the north had come to a Dinka village, they had ravaged the village, they had raped the women and killed so many of them, and children and all the men. And there were just a few women walking by, and they got there just after that had happened. And she said that was her worst experience. But then they observed what these women were doing, and they happened to be planting crosses, misalaba, all over the place. And they wondered what they were doing. Maybe they were fashioning memorials for the dead. One of the team members said, why don't we just ask them? So they did. And the women said this: the world would neither know nor care about what we have gone through here. But we are followers of Jesus Christ. And right now, he is the only person who understands what we are going through. We serve a God who has been in it with us, and who is not separated from where we are, from what we have gone through. And he carries each one of us through those experiences. So even evil and suffering cannot convince me to become an atheist. They actually drive me closer to God, because they point to God in those two ways: by invoking design and an objective moral law, and then God gives us the comfort of knowing that he is with us even through those kinds of experiences. So no, being an atheist is just too steep a price to pay. Logically and experientially, it's not something that I'm willing to live with or even to entertain. Bertrand Russell said this, that we are just a random collocation of atoms. Do you realize that? When you go to work, when you came here, wherever you went, it's just atoms moving from one place to another. That's all you are. There's nothing else going on. And we walk around thinking we are so important. It's just atoms that are being moved from one place to another. That's all there is. And he said that if you want to be an atheist, you have to embrace that thinking, and then you have to build a foundation of unyielding despair. So you despair, but you say, I'm not going to yield to my despair. I'm just going to keep on moving. To keep on living. And let me tell you, there is no need to do that, because God has revealed himself in the person of Jesus Christ through the scriptures. And that's what we'll be talking about next time. God bless you so much.